and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. The West's deep involvement in the Ukraine conflict suggests any negotiations are off the table. In fact, only escalation is on the horizon. Is NATO spoiling for an outright conflict with Russia? It certainly seems so. To discuss these issues and more, I'm joined by my guests, Martin Jay in Marrakesh. He's an award-winning journalist and commentator. And in Budapest, we have George Samueli. He's a podcaster at The Gaggle, which can be found on YouTube and Locals. All right, gentlemen, Crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump in anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. All right, let's start out with George in Budapest. This is probably one of the strangest times in this conflict because we have the Blinkens of the world. Annalena Baerbock was with Blinken in Kiev. They found an extra $1 billion in the couch under the couch cushions miraculously. And then we have this, you know, just kind of bald-faced introduction of very sophisticated weaponry. The focus right now is the destruction of the Kerch Bridge. The intelligence that the Ukrainians are given is being stepped up. They're being very open about it. The whole crisis around Starlink and Elon Musk was revealed. But then, George, at the same time, it seems like even in the mainstream media is saying, well, the counteroffensive isn't meeting expectations. It's not meeting its goals and all that. I mean, there seems to be a real mixture of messages going on out there. Go ahead, George.
No, I agree. I think it's a very, very good point. It is a mixture of messages. But the West is clearly playing a very dangerous game here. They've made a calculation that they can escalate and escalate and escalate, cross one red line after another, because, as they figure, Russia is too afraid to retaliate against us. If they retaliate against us, then Article 5 goes into effect, or one for all for one, and we have world war. So they're doing things now that a few months ago they had said they're not going to do, that it'd be too dangerous. So now the UK and France have both handed Ukraine essentially long-range cruise missiles. And then we had this cruise missile attack, the Storm Shadow, provided by the UK on Sevastopol. The UK is making no attempt to conceal its role in this. So the UK knew exactly how these missiles would be used. And now we have the Biden administration saying that they're going to send these 80 ACMS missiles to Ukraine, having said, again, months ago, no, we can't do that. It's too dangerous, too escalatory. They're going to send them. And when Blinken was asked in an interview the other day, well, this will be an attack on Russian soil. How do you feel about that? I said, well, we don't really have any say in the matter. You know, it's a Ukrainian issue. So, of course, this is complete nonsense because we know that the United States, as you said, United States is providing tactical intelligence to Ukraine. So we're in a position now that Ukraine is being told, hey, why don't you just keep attacking Russian land? I mean, just, you know, keep targeting Russian mainland. And Ukraine says, fine, you know, we've got a blank check them. This is a very dangerous position because you still ultimately have to look at it and say, well, how long is Russia going to put up with this? Because, well, you just can't. You can't be a great power and just sit on your hands while the UK, the US, France say, yeah, go right ahead, keep attacking the Russian mainland. So I think we're getting into an ever more dangerous situation.
Yeah, Martin, and also it kind of tears away the facade this has anything to do with Ukraine. It doesn't. Okay, its counteroffensive is utterly failed. Its casualty rates remain extremely high. But, and as we talked about last week, we, you know, when Blinken was in Kiev, he didn't even talk about NATO membership. It was, you know, it's almost kind of incidental right now. And so to George's point here, here's a great power that's being attacked through a proxy, and it is an untenable situation. I have to imagine that there will be a concerted effort now to destroy airports, major transportation conduits, which haven't been after, 21 months now. They'll have that. And that, of course, caused the greater collapse of the Ukrainian economy. So there are no good options here the way the West continues to escalate. Martin?
No, there aren't. I think that George is right. The escalation game is being played very slowly but very surely, click by click on the ratchet. The latest attack by the Storm Shadows is a good example. But I think it's also a good example of how desperate the Ukrainians are getting, because this, I've always argued from a journalist point of view, this is very much a media war, which for a long time the West won, hands down, with its fake news operation based in Kiev. But I think that's coming to an end now. And I think that the Ukrainians are really realizing that, look, we need at least 6 months to rebuild. You know, and what do we do in that 6 months? We can't do absolutely nothing. We have to do something. We have to distract the media. We have to create an illusion that we are still out there. We are still punching above our weight. And so the long-range missiles thing, I think, well, it's only effective if you can do it every 2 or 3 days or once a week. You know, we haven't seen any repeat of that. And the attacks on the Crimea port were, I mean, these ships were sitting ducks, you know, to use the metaphor. It was not, you can't say it's a great military victory, but I think the Ukrainians and the Americans are beginning to wake up and realize that they need to buy time. And the way to do that possibly is with these tactical strikes. How effective that will be, I'm not sure. But I'm not sure I agree with George that we are, or was it you who made the point that we are leading up to a full-out escalation, a full-on provocation between war, with war with Russia and the West. What I think is the tactic behind this is to trick the Russians into negotiating some sort of formal or informal ceasefire. And what will happen during that period?
That would not only be a tactical defeat, that would be a strategic defeat on the part of the Russians. George, jump in.
No, I agree with you. I think that if Russia did that, I think Russia would be seen to have lost. It would have essentially settled for something less than they had beginning, in February the 24th, 2022. So that would indeed be a defeat for Russia. But again, it's quite possible that this is the way they are they're calculating in NATO land. That, well, we'll trick the Russians into agreeing to this. And then, of course, we're going to use the next few years to arm and Ukraine, pour more and more money in this. I mean, one other issue here. I mean, what exactly is the West game here? The West is obviously, it's to weaken, debilitate Russia, to drain it of manpower, to drain it of resources. That's obviously, Lloyd Austin and others have said that that's one of the game. But there's also a lot of money involved. I mean, we know about Raytheon and all the, the big military contractors. I mean, they're all making a bundle of money. And now we have, Sequoia Capital and all the rest of it, some McKinsey. And they're all getting involved in this whole business of we're going to rebuild Ukraine. So there's a lot of money. And therefore, they have every interest in maintaining it and humiliating Russia. So there's no incentive on the part of the West to bring this to any kind of conclusion. They think the longer it goes on, the more it's going to hurt Russia.
Martin, you want to respond to that? Go ahead.
Yeah, from the West point of view, that's clear. War is a racket. And there is, as I've written recently in one of my opinion pieces, there is no greater racket than the Ukraine war. From the West perspective, it all makes sense. The dollars are all there and everyone's laughing to the bank. On the perspective of Zelensky, though, and Ukraine, I think he must be starting to panic because he must be starting to realize that this can't go on forever. You know, he has to keep up appearances. He has to find young men somehow. If he has to send his teams of soldiers going into bars and supermarkets and dragging young men out by their Well, he's got a lot of problems.
He's en route to Washington to be celebrated in the White House still again. Another round of fundraising, crowdfunding, George. It is all about the money, because once the money dries up, then there's no logic to this whatsoever.
No, that's right. But the money isn't going to dry out, because the United States is always finding money for these ventures. I mean, here's another cool billion, and they're going to keep doing this. So that's why, we've got the ATACMS missiles, they got some more, and we just keep it coming, because as they say, they want Zelensky to go on with this war. And there is just infinite amount of money for Ukraine, no money for anything else. I mean, that's important, nothing for anyone else. But for Ukraine, they're going to give it, because ultimately they all think, like Mitch McConnell and the rest of the senators, which is, hey, this is the best money we can have. I mean, this is a wonderful investment. It's much better than...
Well, I mean, George, compared to Afghanistan... They were doing this over a course of 20 years in Afghanistan, and after 20 months, look at the return on investment. That's really amazing when it comes. I mean, Ukraine was, that's like going to Vegas, and winning all the slot machines at once.
Yeah, that's right. And I mean, they spent $2 trillion on Afghanistan, but a lot of people got very rich. I mean, again, Americans didn't, but a lot of people do. And so there's, again, with Ukraine, a lot of people are getting very rich. And they want to go on getting rich, but it's just unfortunate that one consequence of this is that Ukrainians and Russians are dying. They're not getting rich. But there's some Americans, and that's a cash cow, and they have no intention of stopping that cash cow.
Speaking of cash cows, I thought it was quite interesting that Zelensky said, well, we might have elections, but I need $5 billion for it. Okay. I mean, brazen. go ahead, Martin. He's really brazen on, I might have, it's all about democracy and autocracy, but give me $5 billion. Maybe we'll have, maybe.
Yeah, and is he also beginning to get a little bit nervous when he looks at his friend Joe Biden, who just this week, the old story, which has been bandied about on the fringes of the web and a few nerdy geopolitical journalists such as myself, of Biden taking bribes when he was vice president in Ukraine. This has gone mainstream now. We can't ignore this anymore. The FBI are investigating it, and Biden's been impeached on the basis of it. I think Zelensky must be looking at what's going on over in America and wondering, how long can this cash cow keep going? Have we got months or have we got years? There's reports of this oligarch, Kolyabosky, in Ukraine, Kolyabosky, who was, the ringleader, the kingpin, the billionaire who created Zelensky out of nothing from being a naked buffoon playing the guitar on television. He's now supposedly, been arrested. And this is part of, I think this is a nervous reaction by Zelensky. I think he realizes that sooner or later, the Americans and the West are going to turn the screws on Zelensky.
Well, they always do. It's a matter of time. Gentlemen, I'm going to jump in here. We're going to go to a short break. And after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on Ukraine. Stay with RT.
Take a fresh look around at life. Kaleidoscopic, isn't it? A shattered reality distorted by power. Tired vision with no real opinions. Pictures designed to simplify or confuse. Who really wants a better world? And is it just for the chosen few? fractured images presented as fact.
Can you see through their illusions? Going underground can.
Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lubell. This is the Home Edition. To remind you, we're discussing some real news. Okay, let's go back to George in Budapest. All the while, George, NATO is having its largest military exercises since the end of the Cold War. I've talked to former military personnel in the American military, and they say these exercises are just really propaganda and hype and all of that. But it is also sending a message. It's really interesting that last thing that Martin had to say. You and I, all three, as we covered Russiagate exhaustively. But it's really quite interesting, George. It's really Ukraine. It's always been that way.
Yes, that's right. The thing about the United States that one should not forget is that, we think, they left Afghanistan, they left South Vietnam. But that was after 20 years. The Americans aren't just going to go away, tomorrow, the day after tomorrow, next year, the year after. They're going to stick around. And during those 20 years, they can do an awful lot of damage. I mean, we think of what they did in Vietnam for over 20 years. I mean, so, it ended in 75, but they were there since the early 1950s. Same in Afghanistan. Yeah, they left under Biden, but they were there for 20 years, spent $2 trillion. Again, for what purpose? Iraq, they're still in Iraq. This is, again, 20 years since the invasion, they're still in Iraq. So
and not welcomed in Iraq, but they're
still
there. Not
welcome at all. No, they're never welcome. It's never anything creative that they achieve in any of these places. So that's why I think it's somewhat, naive to think that the United States will be abandoning Ukraine anytime in the future, because they think that using Ukraine will diminish Russia, that what they're going to do is slowly but surely grind Russia down and stop it from being a great power. And I think hitting targets inside Russia is part of that strategy. Say, well, what kind of a great power are you? You're allowing Ukraine, this little country, to hit you in Moscow, to hit you in St. Petersburg. And you can't do anything about it because your hands are tied. Because ultimately, your problems are in NATO. And you're too afraid to attack NATO because you're, afraid of provoking us. And I think the Americans are going to keep doing this. And that's why I think at some point, Russia will have to address the issue. I mean, can they allow this to go on? Whether the risks of allowing this to go on are far greater than actually attacking, NATO.
Just to back up George's point, your public opinion here will demand it. Absolutely will demand it. It is not just a political calculation. Martin, it's really interesting. Zelensky gave an interview with The Economist and basically implied that if Ukraine's Western backers back away, there will be millions of Ukrainians that will not take well to that in Europe, implying, possible terrorist acts. I mean, again, it's really quite blatant, this kind of lopsided relationship that the Ukraine has with the United States and with NATO world.
Yeah, well, I think there's two things here. I mean, I think there's the American will to keep the racket going in Ukraine and the American relationship with Zelensky. And that's why I would take to task George's point. I don't think the Americans will go on forever with Zelensky. They will try their very, very best to keep the war racket going on forever in Ukraine. You made the reference to Afghanistan or Iraq. Well, I was in Afghanistan, so I have some experience on the ground there. But let's not forget that Afghanistan was boots on the ground. At its peak, when I was there in 2008, I think Obama had about 150,000 soldiers there. Someone will correct me in the comments, probably. But we don't have the same situation in Ukraine. And the missing component are the soldiers, are men. That can't go on forever. Zelensky's having real trouble finding men, finding boots on the ground. And what he will do, I mean, he's starting to panic. For me, the reference in the Economist interview was a panicky reaction of what he fears the most, which is him personally being removed, not the war racket slowing down. But to take up George's point again, you know, I think something's got to give before the relationship collapses. And I think that thing, that very item, is the military standoff at the moment. You know, Russia is playing a very clever game. Russia is not rolling its sleeves up and risking high numbers of casualties. It doesn't need to. You know, I mean, Western media is slowly, very, very slowly beginning to acknowledge that NATO has made some miscalculations from the very beginning. And one of the biggest miscalculations it made, was not being very well organized in terms of having a strategy from the very beginning, having an idea about numbers, having ideas about what kind of war. It was just so higgledy-piggledy. It was just such a mess. And that mess allowed Russia the time to build that front line, that 700 or 800 kilometers fortified line. And this is now really the real problem for Ukraine. It can't penetrate it. So, Zelensky is talking to his military advisors and he's talking to NATO. He said, well, look, what can we do? You know, we have to be active. We have to be seen in the world's media to be doing something. And that's where I think the Storm Shadows issue is part of it, is to keep the momentum going. But how long can Russia really put up with that? You know, I mean, all the military analysts are all talking about if Russia went over the line, if it sent its troops into a particular pocket of Ukraine, where would it likely to be? Often, I'm not a military analyst, but often the military analysts point to Odessa from where those rockets came from, you know. And is that the breaking point? Does Russia say, no more of this BS? We're going to go over the line and we're going to sort these people out and stop this.
Well, I think to be fair, and both of you have valid points here, and go back to George here. I mean, I'm not a military expert either, but logic would dictate let the Ukrainian counteroffensive completely sputter out, you know, fizzle out completely. Yeah. And then Russia takes the initiative. I predicted last winter they would do it. Maybe they will do it this winter. So, obviously, this has seeped into the mainstream. The offensive has exhausted itself. They just don't have the oomph to continue forward. Logic would dictate taking advantage of that, George.
Well, I agree. But, you know, as I said, I mean, I thought that they would do it last winter. They didn't do it. Now, maybe they'll do it this winter. They've given no indication of this. Putin makes these statements and so on, but he's given no indication that anything is going to change. Now, maybe it will. That doesn't mean he's going to review his hand at this stage. But again, it goes back to the question. I mean, Ukraine cannot win this war. We know Ukraine cannot win this war. But the NATO strategy is to make sure that Russia doesn't win this war. In other words, the NATO strategy is let's just basically keep this war going. I mean, let's basically just keep draining Russia. Now, of course, you know the price of that is that you're also draining Ukraine. But that as long as Russia is getting drained, then who knows what might happen in Russia? And they're figuring out, well, maybe there'll be yet another Prigozhin. There'll be some kind of your public opinion will turn against
1917.
Exactly. You took the words out of my mouth. Exactly. 1917. Something will give. That's the strategy they're playing. And that's why I think that from Russia's point of view, they should wrap this up. I mean, I think, you know, if I was giving advice, but, you know, obviously, I don't know all the logistics they have. They should essentially mount a serious offensive.
I'm going to tear a page from George. I'm going to throw some of George's words right back, and which I actually agree with, is that one of the reasons why they haven't thrusted more robustly into Ukraine is because they always have to keep the possibility of going to an all-out hot war with NATO, okay? And that's another dilemma that they have. And that wasn't my point. George might brought that up over a year ago. Martin, react to that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's so funny that when you look at the bigger picture and you see what we had before the Ukraine war, which was a huge 500-mile buffer zone, which should have kept both sides content. You know, there was not a NATO threat, a NATO front line. But now, if that escalates and the Russians actually do have some sort of operation, they could go up to the Polish border. So there'll be no buffer zone at all, no distance at all between NATO and Russia, which sort of defeats the whole objects. Well,
there's a lot of NATO on Russia's borders right now. All right, John, we're almost out of time here. I want to talk about this strange person named Ashton Carrillo. This person's name, I'm going to try to avoid pronouns here. I have to say, now you got it. This is a real oddity. This conflict has created a lot of oddity, and this is probably the peak oddity. The last two videos, I'm referring to this person, an American citizen that has been hired to do PR propaganda, no, spokesperson for the Ukrainian military. I saw these videos. I every time I think it's a meme, it's a joke, and they keep telling us it's not. Who wants to take this one? Which one?
Well, I think it's a very interesting that here is a person, obviously very disturbed, with serious mental health issues, a very serious issue with identity, who this person is. It's entirely fitting that this is the person who should be the spokesperson for Ukraine, because Ukraine is, I think, a very sick country with a serious identity issue. So I think it's a match made in heaven.
I have to assume directly, indirectly, this is funded by the U.S. government, taxpayer money.
I talked about miscalculation before. You know, it beggars belief. The number of poor decisions that are made by the Pentagon or the Biden administration, this just seems to be another one. You know, let's have a freak show. Let's wheel out this transgender kind of monster. And this sends a certain amount of messages from Ukraine to the world. You know, hey, we're very westernized. We're very liberal. We have transgender people, and we give them public service jobs, you know, as a spokesperson. But even as a spokesperson, spokeswoman, spokesman, spokesthing, I don't know where I'm going here. Even as a spokesperson, you know, he is not very good. And that's my problem. I don't have a problem if you're a transgender. I don't have a problem what race you are, you know, what your religious beliefs are, or whether you go and kill animals on a Sunday afternoon. What I have a problem with is if you're any good. Are you on message? And this person isn't, you know. And so that's why I'm sort of distracted by it. But, you know, this person...
Martin and Jordan, if a Russian spokesperson talked like that, the internet would blow up, okay? But this is just, you know, taken passively. It's really quite remarkable. You have the Zelensky interview with The Economist, you don't know what we're capable of, and that. All right, gentlemen, unfortunately, we've run out of time. I want to thank my guests in Budapest and in Marrakesh, and I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RTC. And next time, remember, Crosstalk Rules.